Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hello, Hare Krishna.
Please accept our humble obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Accept my obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
How's the weather in Belmont?
It's cold, dark, and we're in the castle. And I was formed. This castle was originally used to record the first Dracula movie.
Really?
Welcome to the charm of ancient Europe.
Yeah, Maharaj, you got to watch out for the vampires there. This Dasrath.
Oh, hi, Haribol.
Hello, Marsh.
We're going to make a movie here called Return of the Dracula.
Became a devotee.
Well, no, we haven't discovered that yet. One girl comes to the temple and she's she meets a boy named Haripada. Anyway, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So for those, for all that are on right now, Hanuman Prashek Swami has very kindly agreed to give class this morning, but I'm sorry, evening for him on the other side of the world, other days. But he's got another seminar right after class, so if we could all respect his time, that's why we're starting early now, so for an hour, and then he has to leave in 1 hour from now. Right. So, Maharaj, we are all set for you. When we get started, usually within the first 5 minutes, 10 minutes even, people will be coming in, so you might hear some beeps. Which, you can go ahead and get started.
As I understand, is text number 1733?
33 and 34 is what we've selected for today, two texts. And when there's two texts, we usually will chant responsibly the first verse, and then you just go ahead and read through the second, and then give the your lecture.
So it's the chapter, the second Drona Punish.
Yes.
1 second, I plug my phone in here. Okay. Okay, so we do, we should chant Jayarada Madhava?
Please.
Okay. Jaya Radha Madhava Om Japi Hari
Radha Madhava Om Japi Hari
Gopi Jana Ballabha Giribara Hari
Gopi Jana Ballabha Giribara
Shodhanandana Braja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Shishivara Madhava Astasaki ki jai, Sopapada ki jai, Shishi Harinam Sankatan ki jai. Narayanam Namaskrityam.
Narayanam Namaskrityam.
Naram Chaiva Narotamam.
Naram Chaiva Narotamam.
Devam Sarasvatim Vyasam. Tato Jayam Udirayat. Okay. So I have somebody gave me a Kindle thing here. Back it up. There it is. Okay. Shrimad Bhagavatam 1733. Please repeat. Tata asadya tarasa.
Tata asadya tarasa.
Darunam gotami sutam.
Darunam gotami sutam.
Babanda marsha tam raksha.
Babanda marsha tam raksha.
Pasum rasa naya yata.
Pasum rasa naya
okay. Tata.
Tata.
Thereupon.
Thereupon.
Asadya.
Asadya.
Arrested.
Arrested.
Tarasa.
Tarasa.
Dexterously.
Dexterously.
Darunam.
Darunam.
Dangerous.
Dangerous.
Gotami Sutam.
Gotami Sutam.
The son of Gotami.
The son of Gotami.
Babanda.
Babanda.
Bound up.
Bound up.
Amarsha.
Amarsha.
Angry.
Angry.
Tamraksha.
Tamraksha.
With copper red eyes.
With copper red eyes.
Pasum.
Pasum.
Animal.
Animal.
Rasanaya.
Rasanaya.
Rope. By ropes.
By
right.
Yata.
As it were.
As it were.
Tata asadya tarasa darunam gat gotami sutam babanda marsha tam raksha pashum rasa naya yata. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. And of course, Prabhupada did this before he left India. Right? Arjuna, his eyes blazing in anger like two red balls of copper, dexterously arrested the son of Gotami and bound him with ropes like an animal. I was thinking when I was reading this, I don't think I would like to have Arjuna staring at me with copper red eyes. It's probably the worst situations in the world. Ashvatthama's mother, Prabhupada says in the purport, Ashvatthama's mother, Kripi, was born in the family of Gotama. The significant point in this sloka is that Ashvatthama was caught and bound up with ropes like an animal. According to Sridhar Swami, Arjuna was obliged to catch the son of a brahmana like an animal as part of his duty, dharma. This suggestion by Sridhar Swami is also confirmed in the later statements of Sri Krishna. Ashvatthama was a bona fide son of Dronacharya and Kripi, but because he had degraded himself to a lower status of life, it was proper to treat him as an animal, not as a brahmana. So when I was reading this, I was remembering a little bit. I think that Kripi's brother is Kripacharya, and two very respect this time, people's family lineage and their character and everything else were very closely united like that. So you took birth in the right family for your particular karma. Even now, it's interesting, there was a magazine on British genealogy. And when George Bush and Alan Gore were competing for the presidency of the United States, they went back to their family lines, and they both come from Europe, and they were both Kshatriyas. Actually, they were cousins. So the same people end up in the same line of work. Then one devotee, Chandradas, he works for the prison system in Oregon. It's a maximum security prison. And they said they started doing a thing called genograms. And of course, in America, we don't like this because everybody can be independent. Everybody can become as good as they want to, like that. You know, but the actual investigation was that somebody may be in prison for, robbing $114,000 over the internet and his retirement fund and so on. And it turns out his father was an automobile thief. His grandfather was a horse thief. And they're discovering this is the fact. And even now, people take birth in families because some kind of karma like that. So at this time, 5,000 years ago, as I was thinking that it was even more prominent. And so for a Kshatriya family like Draupadi, Arjuna, to arrest Gautama, to arrest Ashwatthama in this way, was really, you know, insulting, intense, degrading. He was not, and he was a son of their teacher, like that. So a very intense situation. Let me read the next purport. So next text. Shibiraya Nanishatam Rajva Badva Ripum Balat Praharjunam Prakupito Bhagavan Ambujekshanaha. After binding Ashwatthama, Arjuna wanted to take him to the military camp. The personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, looking on with lotus eyes, spoke to Arjuna. Both Arjuna and Lord Sri Krishna are described here in an angry mood, but Arjuna's eyes were like balls of red copper, whereas the eyes of the Lord were like lotuses. This means that the angry mood of Arjuna and that of the Lord are not on the same level. The Lord is transcendence, and thus he is absolute in any stage. His anger is not like the anger of a conditioned living being within the modes of qualitative material nature. Because he is absolute, but his anger and pleasure are the same. His anger is not exhibited in the three modes of material nature. It is a sign of his bent of mind towards the cause of his devotees, because that is his transcendental nature. Therefore, even if he is angry, the object of his anger is blessed. He is unchanged in all circumstances. So it's kind of an interesting purport, I was thinking. Of course, one question is why it's here in the Bhagavatam. So in general, the perspective we understand is that the first two cantos are Krishna's lotus feet, and canto one specifically, of course, is like a preface. It tells us why the whole book is going to be produced, under what circumstances it was produced, what is his purpose, who's the principal speaker, what are his qualifications, who's the principal student, what are his qualifications. So all this in the first canto, you know, the disappearance of Krishna and his associates, the appearance of Maharaj Parikshit and Swami, Kali Yuga coming, Krishna taking all the Dharma with him. So then we need an incarnation. We need, to protect people in Kali Yuga. So by the arrangement of Krishna, Prabhupada explains that Sukadeva Goswami is the father, and Maharaj Parikshit is the mother, and the incarnation is Srimad Bhagavatam. And so then in the second canto, it actually starts, you know, more formally, as Sukadeva Goswami begins his discussion. So this chapter is talking about the Narada Muni inspired Vyasadeva to write it. And it says that Vyasadeva was like looking at the antecedents, the things that happened before. And part of that was, of course, that Maharaj Parikshit, who was he? What's his situation? And so it's describing that. He was attacked in the womb by Ashwatthama. So it kind of a little bit deviates, yeah, but it gives us this perspective of what the whole situation was at this time. And then more specifically, what I was noticing is kind of like this point about anger, about chastisement, Brahmabandhu, because even our own situation, you know, somebody may take a birth in ISKCON, Dvija, you know, second initiated person in ISKCON, our society, and because we say this, you know, that somebody I'm memorizing these for our Bhakti Bhai Bhava thing. It was very important. It's the end of Lord Kapildev's Bhagavatam, and his mother says, what to speak of somebody who actually sees you Anybody who engages in hearing and chanting about you, who offers respects to you, who contemplates you, even if he's born in the family of dog eaters, and since most of us in the West have eaten hot dogs, probably could all be classified as dog eaters. Even if he's born in the family of dog eaters, Sadaya, he immediately becomes qualified to perform sacrifices. So it's not an ordinary person who can offer ghee and so on to Vishnu, who can touch his body and dress him. And, you know, so then, but here's the point then, that Ashvatthama has degraded himself to the point where Sridhar Swami is saying, and probably, and Krishna is going to support this, that now he shouldn't be treated like that. You know? Later on, we'll explain that Draupadi, because she has her gentle feminine nature, and she's a good and gentle lady, even though this fellow's got the heads off her kids, which is like, she's still, you know, looking at him like a son of a brahmana, respectful like that. You know? Amazing. You know? But Prabhupada says in the purport, he'll say that we shouldn't, you know, it's maybe proper for a lady to think like this, but in the end, a man should consider things a little bit more impersonally about things in the actual, you know, rational situation like that. And so then he was arrested like an animal. You know? But then the next question is about anger, because in Upadeshamrita in the beginning, first verse, Vacho Vegam Manasa Krodha Vegam, Prabhupada says in the purport, it's not possible to fight without anger. And so many people, maybe some of our audience here I know, have to know this. You have to get angry. You know? Hari Soy Prabhu describes one time, Prabhupada was invited to a Bhagavad Gita symposium. And before he went in, he was like pacing back and forth, was criticizing all the different swamis there and ostentatiously, whatever it means, exteriormente. He apparently was like talking to Hari Soy, but Hari Soy could see that Prabhupada was just getting himself in the state of mind he wanted to be in. He was making himself angry. So finally, when he went into the hall, Arya Swayapra said he was actually frightened what was going to happen, because Prabhupada was so, like, you know, furious, you know. But then he changed his mentality after some time. He did what he wanted to do, got everybody talking, discussing, debating. Then he kind of calmed everybody down. Everyone was laughing. So even though it's describing the anger of somebody under the modes of material nature, of course, our idea would be Arjuna is not in that situation. Maybe he knows, you know, that maybe right now I got to become angry. Prabhupada says that one should not hesitate, one should not forget to become angry, at least for some time, to drive away the wrongdoers. Another real famous quotation I remember, I think it's in terms of Parasaram. Prabhupada says that anger is never good, but is sometimes necessary to defend the weak against the strong when good arguments fail. Now, I always remember that. We quoted it several times. We had to give a whole lecture one time to the Secret Service in Peru. It was about 40 guys with very square necks, about 15 ladies with all their hairs tied in buns with identical purses. And they're real, like kshatriyas. They were sitting listening, you know, attention, sitting but erect. And then somebody even asked us, he said, if you kill somebody in the line of duty, do you get karma, a reaction from that? And I quoted that verse, that citation, that it's never good, but sometimes it's necessary. And when good arguments fail, you may have to use some violence. And I was kind of looking at the audience, and maybe four or five people out of that. And I said afterwards, I said that, but you'll always feel bad afterwards, even though you know it was absolutely necessary. He had to kill somebody. And looking at the audience, you could see a few kind of like nodding, like, yeah, it's been there. So, you know, that's the material world, not a perfect place. And so Prabhupada also, in one letter to Tushta Krishna, he was saying in the beginning, force. In the beginning, in preaching, force may be necessary, but it has to be applied expertly. Otherwise, it will be a bad taste for everybody. the person you're using for solemn preaching, yourself, people listening. You know. So that's why the Kshatriya, you know, Kshatriya is actually trained how to use force, how to properly, physical force. And as brahmanas, we should be trained, what's because we should be trained how to use it properly so there won't be a bad taste afterwards. So, you know, it's a very nice, we have a nice PowerPoint show we use several times, been really popular in South America, comparing Hamlet and Arjuna. And very nice comparison, so many points like that. And of course, such great literature, it's really intense, you know, the literature. So in the, we used it, we in the beginning we have a citation actually from Romeo and Juliet, go right across the screen, and it says, two families both alike in dignity from ancient grudge break forth to new mutiny, and civil blood makes civil hands unclean. And so you think about this, that's many times we have to face that in terms of our own internal dealings with devotees. And civil blood makes civil hands unclean. So very expert. When we were in Vrindavan and the Brajmada Parikram, it gets so intense because you're walking every day barefoot, you're sleeping in a tent in terms of devotees. You know, all the announcements are in Hindi. So the last people to figure out what's going on are the foreigners. You know, where's the water? Like that. And, you know, so after a few days, your mind becomes irritated. So actually, a couple of times I became angry, and it was a terrible experience, you know. So after that, somehow or other, this mantra came to my mind. That in Vrindavan, only Krishna and Balaram kill demons. And I would tell myself that sometimes. And I've used it in ISKCON. Prabhupada says, every corner of our temples is Vaikuntha. So we can live in ISKCON as Vrindavan Dham. And then, okay, when these problems come with devotees and different agitations, we can chant Hare Krishna, Hare Rama. And let, if somebody has to kill demons in ISKCON, okay, let Krishna and Balaram do it. You know? And if they're going to empower us to do it, then it becomes obvious. Nobody's disturbed. One time we were walking into Radhakund, and, you know, on both sides, these little Indian shops where the guys just open up the front and they sit there, little shack type place. And they were sitting in front of their goods on both sides. We were going into Radhakund. And two, you know, kind of big dogs were chasing this one little piggy. And his mother wasn't around, so they were like grabbing him and shaking him, and he was running away and squealing. They grabbed him again. So the thing is, they do that a few times and depersonalize him, and then they just rip his stomach open and eat him, you know. So just spontaneously, I hit the dog who had him on the back of my umbrella, and he said, woof, like that, and popped the piggy. He just ran under one of these shops like that and escaped, you know. And then I thought, oh my God, I just hit a bird's bossy. I'm going to go to hell, you know. So it was all very quick, you know. So I just kind of looked up around me, and these two shopkeepers were on both sides there chewing their betel nuts, you know. And they could see what I was thinking and the whole situation. They kind of like looked at each other, and they kind of looked at me, and they kind of, you know, rolled their heads from side to side. And the whole thing was, okay, you didn't hurt the dog. Actually, the dog just had already, with his friend, gone off looking for another pig, and he didn't even look at me. You know? You didn't hurt the dog, you know. And to save one to save one Brijbasi, you can hit another like that, bump another Brijbasi like that, you know. So, but it was so quick. I didn't even like, you know, think about it or anything. But it all was proper. So that's my thought, would be that sometimes we have to engage in this activity, and we have to treat people quite, you know, strong in terms of their situation. As brahmanas, probably, of course, it's going to be verbally, you know. But we should, maybe we can even avoid that. We don't have to do it, you know, unless, you know, Krishna tells us to do it. In the case of Vashvatama. And then, of course, you see the same thing. It was a difficult situation. Even though Krishna told him to do it, and Yudhisthira said, don't do it. Draupadi said, don't do it. Bhima said, do it. Bhima wanted to do it himself to kill him. So then Krishna entered his heart, that's what I'm trying to say here, and gave him the perfect intelligence how to kill him and not kill him at the same time. and everybody was satisfied. So that's kind of my thoughts. It's really kind of the story is very intense. You know, this whole thing, you make dramas out of these things, and they become really kind of intense. You put them into modern language and situation like that. So do I guess at this point, like how Mr. Big Island, how do we deal with questions and answers like that? Comments.
I actually wanted to thank all of our audience. There wasn't everybody looked like they muted. It wasn't too many disturbances. And thank you, Maharaj, very much for a wonderful class. This was great. Okay, so we invite everybody either on Skype or free conference or however you're tuning in right now. If you have any questions or comments for Maharaj, we have him for at least another half hour. Do you have some questions? There was a question, Maharaj, that actually came up yesterday about how Arjuna, he was instructed by Krishna to kill. And the neophytes say, well, Krishna says it just like he told Maharaj Yudhisthira to lie. Maharaj Yudhisthira hesitates. Arjuna is hesitating. Of course, I know you just touched on that right now about him aspiring within the heart, but then taken in such a way, and it should have. Does that mean that we can hesitate if we hear orders from the spiritual master? Or if we're not contacting Krishna himself?
There's two examples I remember. One of course is when Dhruva Maharaj, he goes off to look for God, and then Narada Muni comes along and he says, "Well, you're just a little boy, you know. Come on, just forget it. Go home and play, you know." And then Dhruva Maharaj, he says, "Well, sir, I don't want to disrespect you, but I'm going to determine I'm going to do this. And so, like, you know, if you can't give me instructions how to help me, then I want to offer my respects to you, and I'll be on my way." And the Narada Muni says, "Well, I was just testing you, you know, to see if you're sincere or not. You know, okay, since you're sincere, I'll give you instructions." And, of course, the other example is right there in the beginning of the Upadeshamrita, which constitutes first instructions for neophyte devotees. Yeah. Somebody's calling me. I got to decline. Okay, decline. Yeah. And so there is, you know, Upadeshamrita, Vacho Vegam, Manasa Krodha Vegam. And right in the very beginning, Prabhupada quotes the example of Maharaj Pariksit. That's from the story of Ajaymil. You see, in the end of the fourth canto? No, fifth canto. Subhadeva Goswami is describing everybody's going to go to hell because of karma. So the beginning of the sixth canto, then Maharaj Pariksit says, "Well, is there any way for people to avoid this?" You know? And so Subhadeva Goswami says, "Yeah, you can counteract impious activities by pious activities. You should plant trees, dig wells." You know. And so Maharaj Pariksit says, "Well, my dear Gurudev, I have to reject that because we see that it doesn't work. You know, people they are just engaged in like an elephant. They take a bath, they fast, they drink too much, they stop smoking. But again, they do it again. So I have to reject your suggestion." So then Subhadeva Goswami says, "Yes, you know, you're right. You know, I'm testing you." And he suggests jnana. It goes from karma to jnana. Do austerities, investigate what is life, purify your knowledge of, you know, matter and spirit. And then Subhadeva Maharaj rejects him again. So then, finally, Sukadeva Goswami says, "Yes, your intelligence is very sharp. You're right. The only way to counteract these activities is pure devotional service." So I would say that the point is, and from those examples, and probably using it right away in the Upadeshamrita, is that we have the right to have bona fide doubts. Artificial doubts are rejected, so we can present our doubts. But we should do it in a respectful manner. Like that.
That's a wonderful two examples. Thank you so much.
So, Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for a very nice class. This is Jana Spriha. I have a question that sometimes if the end justifies the means, you know, like the devotees we were in a class in Russia. They have to give the guards, the customs people, vodka to smuggle books in as a bribe. So they let them bring the books into Russia.
So your question is if, yeah, well.
Is there any other 5 minutes? Are we sometimes able to bend the rules, or is there karma in that or not? Or
I would say it fits in right in the previous analysis that, you know, violence is never good. So distributing alcohol is actually a violent activity in society like that. But again, you try your best to, you know, actually Hansa Duda was distributing pornography to the guards in Turkey to get through. Anyway, one of our godbrothers and his Sankirtan party were bringing Playboy magazines because they've been told that's what you give the border guards in Turkey to get in Afghanistan. Uh-huh. Otherwise, they may rob you and kill you. And so they did that, and they made their way from Germany all the way down to India. So, yeah, you have to make your choices. And so that's the question, because at the end of the Battle of Kurukshetra, Mars Yudhisthira is thinking, hey, I did the wrong thing. In the end, I could have just become a mendicant and walked around and forget the 5 villages. We'll just walk around like mendicants with nothing, you know? And then all these people would still be alive. And I could have, like, not let the books go through, but rather I could have, okay, these guys won't be satisfied with, like, samosas and pakoras. Okay, so I'm not gonna go that far. I'm not going to distribute alcohol, you know? And so then what's the standard for making these decisions? Because it's called Vipad Dharma, you know, in weird situations. So in the Bhagavatam, Krishna couldn't convince Yudhisthira. Nobody could. So finally, because he wanted Bhishma to convince him. So as I'm remembering, Bhishma Dev said, no, you were guided by God, the Brahmanas, and Vedic scriptures. So practically speaking, in ourselves, and also Prabhupada says also the Parasara's Dharma Shastra, we can follow that. It's in the purports in the, what is it, ninth chapter, first canto, where Prabhupada summarizes Bhishma Dev's instructions. He says we can take advantage of the Parasara's Dharma Shastra. And Parasara, for example, he gives all these different things about how to make adjustments. For example, if a girl's husband dies, if he takes sannyas, if he becomes big moral fall down or something, goes to a foreign country that doesn't come back, then first class is for her to take sati, become a sannyasini. But he says in Kali Yuga, hey, this is, you know, not practical possibly. So second class and still progressive is if she doesn't get remarried, but she's life, has nice house, has friends, like that. And he says third class in Kali Yuga and still progressive in Kali Yuga is that she can get remarried after 6 years, like that. And so details are there when to make these adjustments. Okay, that vodka is okay, possibly, but hey, you know, ham sandwiches are pushing it. That's just too much. We're not going to go to the level of like that. But then Parasara says, but this is Kali Yuga, and he says, I can give you some suggestions, but things are so confusing that, you know, in the end, to make some of these decisions, practical decisions, you should ask one sadhaka totally dedicated to spiritual life. So that, you know, fits like Prabhupada's description perfectly. So you ask Prabhupada, hey, Prabhupada, to get these books in there, you know, we have to give these guys, you know, some alcohol and bribes. And then Prabhupada makes the decision. And even more, then Parasara says, in the absence of such a pure sadhaka, a synod of 6 brahmanas can come to the same conclusion. And so that goes back to Bhishma Dev. He says, God, the brahmanas, and the Vedic scriptures. So God, Hari Nama, age of Kali, and these kind of things, you chant Hare Krishna very sincerely, good japa, nice kirtan, considering your situation, what to do. And you get some inspiration. And then you reading Prabhupada's books, and sometimes if you read Prabhupada's books and not enough, he talks about, you know, so many situations, you know, so many details you keep on reading. So God, the scriptures, and finally the brahmanas, and you can talk to other devotees. Parashara says talk to good people. He says the rules and regulations are like this and that, but he said the ultimate thing which determines dharma is the opinion of good people. So talk to like a fair number of good people. And everybody says, yeah, okay, you know, vodka's okay, but no, not the beef and that kind of stuff. Forget it, you know. And so then even if you go to hell, you'll have Prabhupada's books, your bead bag, and six devotees will be with you. Sounds kind of like, you know, Radhadesh. So that's what I would understand. Is we have enough source to make some good decisions, and I don't know what the basis was about using alcohol or not, you know. But maybe it was, yeah, it was okay. The books got in there and it worked, you know.
Thank you very much. That was a very good answer, Prabhu.
Yeah, that was good. Rose, this is our opportunity. Any?
I have. That's okay.
What? Go ahead, Roger. Opinion.
Okay. Maharaj, you were talking earlier in your class. You were talking about there was one devotee who was a prison guard, and he observed, you know, that they were making studies on the DNA, and you know, maybe one person who was a thief has a father who was a thief, who has a grandfather who was a thief.
Actually, he's not a prison guard. He's a psychologist.
Psychologist. Okay.
And they don't do DNA. They just interview them.
Oh, they just interview them. Because also in the DNA, there's so much in the DNA that we carry from our, you know, physically, in the physical world, in the material world, from our, like, just lately in the news, there was this big thing in the news about Oprah Winfrey coming together with her long-lost sister, who actually looked exactly like her other sister. So in other words, you know, we carry family physically, what our family is like, you know, where our physical family. But my question is, so I understand that maybe I may have the same mannerisms as my mother or my father or my sisters, or I might have the same hair color or the eyes or like this. But the jiva, you know, the jiva is who we really are, the jiva within the body. So there may be, in one family, there may be jivas that come from different it's not like we're all the same. Like in a, just like Prahlad Maharaj, he was, you know, his father was a big demon, you know, and mm-hmm. And we see that a lot. Like in a family, there might be somebody that's more inclined to Krishna consciousness or God consciousness, and somebody else maybe a big atheist or something. So, so how does that work? You know, it's like so we're born into these families because it's basically our karma. And also, thing is that second generation, third generation in our line in ISKCON and stuff. You know, I have other friends that have children, and their children are not really inclined. They're not all, but, you know, some, you know.
Yeah. No, as I say, karma is complicated. Hans Duda told us that Prabhupada said every single psychological circumstance you can encounter is in Srimad Bhagavatam. And so we get people like, you know, who are very advanced jnanis, but still they have reactions of their karma. And again, because you take birth, I would say you take birth in a certain family, and that's controlled. I would say we can all agree on that. You're there under some kind of controlled circumstance.
Uh-huh.
But there are stories that sometimes your worst enemy, who you really harassed, he comes back as your child, to get revenge. And so sometimes your children are your worst enemies, come back to get revenge. And I think a lot of parents can attest to that. There may be some truth in that, like that. So it's not that everybody is there for the same reason, in the same family, and everybody's in the same consciousness. But generally, okay, there's some reason that what it is that's complicated in the name of that. And understand what it is by different symptoms and auguries and that kind of stuff and astrology. You know, maybe some general things we can understand. But other than that, it may be, you know, complicated. And so different techniques, okay, maybe they don't work in the Kali Yuga so well. But then, I remember Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I think it was Jivadharma, and of course it's our philosophy in general, that two things are going on simultaneously. One is your karma for your actions and reactions in the material world. And he says the other thing is our development of our dedication to truth, which we would look at as our spiritual life, you know. And so then, and it's going on, but at some point, when we come, Diksha Kale Bhakti Kari Atma Samarpan, Se Kali Krishna Kari Tari Atma Sam. In the moment of Diksha, which is probably kind of defining a second initiation in some ways, you know, but first initiation is the same thing if you follow it. But when actually you take the process, you know, from the Acharya, when you get on the path, when you're connected, at that point, you know, Durga is controlling our karma before, but she passes the reins of our karma to Radharani. And now, you know, whatever's happening to us, okay, they use our karma, our life, our nature to give us lessons. But now it's all for that purpose. It's no longer it's no longer for us. We've given it up. We're worshiping the deity. We're going to worship Radha and Krishna 24 hours a day. And so we have different things happen. We still act like women. We still act like men. We still act like kshatriyas, vaishyas. But now it's all connected, this diet, Krishna karma. And now it's all for matter for our education like that. So devotee comes to that platform, as you understand. But before that, yeah, it's mixed. You know, we're jnanis or something. We're developing wisdom. And so we have to see our different positions because different people, you know, different things are happening. They can express their free will to some degree, to make some choices, and with some degree it's controlled. You know, but finally, when we're using that free will to make the choice to become devotees, then we have the rope. You know, we're in the water still, but we have the rope now, and there's a choice to take the rope, and we're connected to the land, and we're going towards the shore, and each footstep it gets better and better. So like that, I would say that, you know, we have our karma. And if we're deviating, not following the principles and everything else, then Krishna's trying to help us. But hey, but now we're, you know, Durga's taking the ropes again. And so we understand now that we're producing our own karma and it's reactions of our karma. And it may not be lessons from Krishna, you know, why things are happening to us. So that's what I would understand.
Thank you, Maharaj.
I have one more question, if I may. Yesterday in class, this Mataji from England gave a class about chanting the holy name, and she quoted some of the different levels that one could get into chanting the holy name. Are you familiar with any of those terms? Or?
I know there's different terms. I think a lot of times people are quoting from Madhurya Kadambani, no?
I think she was quoting from Bhagavatam 11.7.32 or something.
Oh, I mean, some different things. I may know some of the terms, like if it's Prabhupada's 11.7.32.
I'm not quite sure, but maybe somebody else remembers.
Yeah.
Madhavan, are you there?
No, I'm sorry, I don't remember.
Yeah. So, but yeah,
I was trying to get back to it. I had written it down one place. Different levels of sound. There's some sound is just in the mind, some sound is in the heart, and they compare it to the different chakras.
Oh, okay.
Trying to get exact list on that. It was on the instant message on the bottom from, I guess, whenever she gave class. So trying to get back to that.
Was it 11th canto?
Yes, it was.
And was it chapter 7?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's the instructions to Uddhava. Yeah. Yeah. No, there are, again, I don't know, Bhagavatam is so incredible. That's what, one thing I began, I heard Prabhupada not too long ago say that even in 100 years, you cannot study all these books thoroughly. And actually, I felt so much relief when I heard him say that, because I realized I was trying to understand everything Prabhupada said, you know. And I realized, no, even at the time, Prabhupada even said that. No disciple can take everything the spiritual master is offering. So maybe if we all work together as a team, we can keep some, you know, some comprehension of what Prabhupada is trying to give us. You know? But, yeah, I mean, different levels and the comprehension of his holy name, sound.
You know? Yeah. Maharaj, I was thinking also there's a name for Krishna, Bhavagrahi Janardhan. And it seems like it rounds all the edges off that Krishna knows what your intention is. And that to me always seemed to be like the bottom line. When you show your intention when wanting to do the right thing, and he guides you with your heart, whether you find it or not, is the next continuation of your relationship with him.
Yeah, I agree. But for example, like every day, sometimes I just say chai and chant, you know, and I do 25 rounds a day now, about 10 years, something like that. So maybe I get like, you know, 14 rounds and I really get some meaning. I'm trying to chant with meaning. I keep my mind pretty focused. But at some point there, it's getting to the point where I just say, I have to start doing mechanical chanting. I just cannot keep my intensity up. But I know my intelligence says, okay, hey, it's better than, it's like Satsumar, it's better than mechanical chanting, not chanting. You know, so find some mechanical technique to keep this rascal mind focusing like that, because it'll become more purified. And that's where I think when the Sankhya comes in, because then you can see, okay, this is, I'm chanting with my lips, but my mind is running every place. Okay, get your mind involved too. Sit in front of a picture of Krishna. Feel the beads like that. Chant each mantra like that, you know. And then the higher level.
That verse was 11:21:36. And
my
it goes,
gosh.
That's Lord Krishna's explanation of the Vedic path. And it says, the transcendental sound of the Vedas is very difficult to comprehend and manifests on different levels within the prana, senses, and mind. The Vedic sound is unlimited, very deep, and unfathomable, just like the ocean. And the purport is not that long, but it says, according to Vedic knowledge, the Vedic sound is divided into four phases. That which can be understood only by the most intelligent Brahmins. This is because the three of the divisions are internally situated within the living entity, and only the fourth division is externally manifest. So it goes into kind of a technical point here. I don't know if you want to hear the rest of it or not.
11:21:36. I have my weird Kindle thing here. I'm just starting to use it. 11:21:36.ey. Okay. Go. There we go. Okay. Shabda Bama. Hey, it works. Wow. Okay, knowledge. Yeah. Okay. Oh, my God. I got it. I'm looking at it, I got it noted down. I'll look at it later. But it sounds technical like that. Our whole thing about Sankhya is we always remember behind it is the motivation, like you're saying. But yeah, it comes down to certain levels, and sometimes we can't stay on the highest level. That's why I was saying that sometimes we can at least be involved in Varna Ashram, and then that'll help us get back up to the higher level. And by pushing, we'll become accustomed to always live at the highest level. We'll become free from these attachments. You know? And so I know, one other thing on my comment is, if you're interested in that, my background's in psychology. There are very good books by E.T. Hall. That's not extraterrestrial. It's Edward Thomas. And he's a cultural anthropologist from the University of Northwestern. He may be dead by now, but he has about several books which were in reprint on cross-cultural studies of sense perception, time perception, space perception, different cultures, really goes into the level about how that all these things, you know, space, time, they're all created in the mind. And the other person, of course, is Marshall McLuhan. His books on understanding media. One really good book, a super book, is The Media is the The Media is the Massage. And that's a real, like, graphic thing. You can get it on Amazon. And then last person, he's more recent, is Ernst Poppel. And he has a thing called Mind Works. But if you look for the book, you've got to write it all as one word, Mind Works. And he's a biologist, but he goes into these really intense things. For example, he says if you have, repeat, if something happens within 3 seconds, the mind can classify it as one experience. So I started to chant my trying to chant my maha mantra within 3 seconds, and I noticed that yeah, it was a fact. I could actually, it became iconographic. The whole mantra was there at one time. It wasn't like it was going by by. And I could chant, keep it there. And then I could see the different relationships. Oh, I'm always emphasizing Hare Rama more than Hare Krishna. So I could change the balance and it became a different experience. So that's why you meditate on yantras, Sri Yantra, Bhu Yantra. And it's at that point you have to get out of this linear thinking and get into this iconographic thinking. And that will, linear thinking is in the head. The iconographic thinking is more in the heart. And so in this way, the gross sound is in the senses, and then the sound is also manifest in the mind, in the heart. But when it comes to the heart, it's no longer a linear process so much. It's actually all, it's coming to us in iconographic packages, like yantras. So it's all here at one time. And then we have to adjust it. And then finally, of course, is our attitude towards the whole thing that makes a whole difference. Okay. So that's what I would know about it, But I kind of have a verse marked here. This is my passion, I guess.
Somebody's microphone sounds like a cow's licking the microphone and they're coughing.
Yeah, thank you, Nazareth. I can't tell where it's coming from. If we could be careful of that, maybe people can just mute until you actually have a question.
Very distracting.
Raj, I sometimes think that in each situation, each verse, Krishna is revealing himself if you want to accept that part of him and incorporate it into your relationship. And you can kind of like stop where you're comfortable. Like sometimes I think, okay, Krishna, I know you're in the deity. I know where you are. When I want to see you, I can come there on the scripture. I know where you are. But when you accept them in your heart and you kind of like group the whole modes of nature into one unit, and then go to the next spot in a transcendental, then the whole modes of nature is dealt with as one unit. And why would someone go into the modes of nature when it cuts off your intimate relationship with Krishna?
I remember in Manasiksha, Raghunath Das Goswami, he says, Vaidhi Bhakti is a cheating process. Like that. And so I was thinking, yeah, maybe for him, but for me, God, I'm just struggling to try and do it sometimes like that, you know. So that's all, my only impression would be that different people are on different levels, you know.
Well, it does seem like an oxymoron when you say Prakriti Bhakti, that he's a material transcendentalist. You know, it just seems funny on that stage. But that's why I think the 10th offense is time calculated. It says it doesn't really become an offense to actually understand. After you understand these instructions, and then there's so many instructions, at a certain point, you have to give it up. And that's, I think, what Krishna's waiting for. How much, at a certain point, you have to give it up. It's not this lifetime, it's the next lifetime, but it becomes very apparent what it is you have to give up. And then, if you don't want to, then you get covered so you can still remain happy and go on with everything.
But also, for example, you look at it, make you look at it, are the queens of Dwarka ready to give up their chastity and become adulteresses?
And move to Vrindavan, you mean?
Yeah, that's Krishna's asking you. You can imagine you're a chaste wife now, and that's okay. It's not just materially, but even spiritually, is a distinction there, that your service now has to come to this point where you really need to sacrifice this, you know, this chastity to become like an adulteress, you know. And Prabhupada says the gopis don't like to do this. They're very anxiety about being unchaste and stuff like that. But they see that because Krishna is the only way to help Krishna. And that's their thing. Krishna needs this. There's no other way to do it. Okay, well, we'll surrender this love. But I guess I should kind of get going here now because our next program is there. But these are, wow, it's really hard. This is nice programs like that.
Maharaj, regards to linear thinking, I heard one time a devotee say, the trip to Vrindavan is a path from your mind to your heart. When you want to go to Vrindavan, get out of your mind and you go into your heart.
Carl Jung was with the Hopi Indians, and I think this is in the Tavistock lectures. If you look it up, nice book. And he was talking to them in 1932 or something, and he said, you know, sometimes when I have different thoughts in my head, and they all kind of looked at each other. And they kind of moved away from him. He said, Hopi Indians in New Mexico, very psychologically well-adjusted. And he said, oh, did I say something wrong? And they looked at each other and they said, well, you said you have thoughts in your head. You know, only a madman has thoughts in his head. A sane man has thoughts in his heart. And there's a black poetess from South Africa. She says, a woman thinks with her belly. A man thinks with his heart, and a white devil, he thinks with his head.
Wow.
So I guess I got to go now. It's 6:55 p.m. here, and the ghosts are starting to move down to Mongolia, to the Gorarchik and the castles. I can hear their chains rattling. You know? So we'll please bless us. Going to be here a couple more weeks getting our seminars. And it's so nice to be in touch with everybody, Dasya, to give me messages like that. So, Mr. Big Island, thank you very much.
There is over 2 dozen devotees on either on Skype or three conferences. So, thank you very much, Maharaj, for benedicting your lecture, spending your time like this. It's very nice. I hope that we can get your association again in the future.
Yeah, as Tatiksha Karunika said, if I don't see you in the future, I'll see you in the pasture.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Bye, Maharaj.
All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.